Welcome back to the National Cancer Prevention Workshop produced by Less Cancer. My name is Miles O'Brien. I am the chairman of the board of that worthy charity. And we have been talking with people about disparities and health outcomes. But we want to pause and take a moment to acknowledge someone who's been integral to getting the message of Less Cancer, not just out to the general public, but to healthcare professionals. Dr. Jan Balmer is the Director of Continuing Medical Education at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. She's been in the CME business, as it is called, for about 30 years. She obviously started as a baby. Jan, first of all, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here. This is going to be a fun conversation. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Now, I assume a lot of people who are listening to us right now know exactly what CME is, but let's assume people don't fully appreciate what continuing medical education is and how important it is. As I understand it, it's been around for about 100 years or so, give or take. You've done a good chunk of that period of time, 30 years of coverage over this field, and I'm sure you've seen a lot of changes. First of all, CME, why do we have this in the first place?
So all of the health professions, medicine, nursing, pharmacy, social work, you know, all of these, dentistry, all require that healthcare professionals maintain their knowledge and are updated regularly to provide quality care and to be aware of all of the latest advances in science and all of those kinds of things. And it affects their ability. The only way they can practice is to have a license. And so most of the states require some kind of continuing education for licensure. And then on top of that, many of the professions also have what they call board certification, which is sort of an accelerated or an advanced or higher level of learning and documentation of expertise. And so both of those factors are really important in terms of making sure that our healthcare professionals and our healthcare teams are well-versed and knowledgeable about all of the advances in science that are happening. And they need to be able to have access to that information. And so the field of continuing medical education and continuing education for the health professions really focuses on making sure that what we provide are evidence-based, scientifically oriented, and patient care-focused continuing education opportunities, you know, either through case studies or lectures or panel discussions or actual simulations and demonstrations, all kinds of hands-on workshops, so that people are really practicing and building their expertise. That's why medical practice is called practice, is because you continue to get better at it over time. Nursing practice is the same. So our role in continuing medical education and continuing education is to make sure that those opportunities are available and that we're really supporting our healthcare professionals and our healthcare teams in meeting all of the needs of their patients and promoting optimum health outcomes for everybody.
So it's a lot of work to find the good stuff. And I know you have to do a lot of vetting to ensure there's no conflicts of interest, et cetera. How do you go about your work in finding good material to share with medical professionals?
So what we really do is talk to our clinicians and look at what the latest research is and then find out sort of where the gaps in knowledge are. What would be the ideal level of care and sort of where are the glitches in the system that are preventing that from happening? Either because someone doesn't have the right knowledge or they don't have access to the right information or the system itself doesn't really foster or provide the support that the healthcare professionals and teams need. And then what we do is design education to address those things, to try to come up with strategies and approaches that help to foster better discussion, new ideas, other kinds of things, make system changes so that our healthcare teams can actually do the work that they need to do that is promoting optimum care.
Now, over the years, though, I know there have been problems with, say, pharmaceutical industry supporting this kind of thing and perhaps putting their thumb on the scale a little bit. How do you guard against that?
So the way we do it is that there have been a lot of, this is probably one of the biggest changes in the 30 years that I've been here, but it actually started before I started in this field. But the bottom line is that industry has a very specific focus, and their specific focus is to make sure, and it's required by the FDA, to make sure that healthcare professionals know what the drugs do and how to deliver the drugs appropriately and all of those kinds of things. Those are considered in our field promotional education because they are related to sales of products. Accredited continuing medical education is very different. If we're going to talk about any products, we're going to talk about all the products in a particular field and what the strengths and weaknesses of each of them are or how they work differently, so that physicians can make informed decisions. And we put it in the context of patient care so that they can figure out how to stratify and make informed decisions in a way that optimizes it for each individual patient that they care for. So we really have to rely on the latest research, what the current standards of care are. Many of the national specialty societies come up with clinical guidelines and other kinds of things. We use those as benchmarks as well, to make sure that we're doing the kinds of things that need to be done that are solely evidence-based and don't have any promotional bias. They don't promote one product over another. They just talk about how they all work differently. And a lot of the work that we do really is not product specific. It really is patient care focused. And so it's a different pathway, I guess, is the best way to explain it. We will talk about products when it's appropriate, but there's a lot of things that we talk about that maybe aren't product, have any relationship to products.
I imagine, medicine is so specialized and complex these days. It must be really challenging to know, because you're dealing with an audience that is extremely sophisticated and needs to get the latest information. How do you, because no one person can know everything, right? How do you get the knowledge base in order to find material that is relevant and, cutting edge, so to speak?
So we work in collaboration with our clinicians and our faculty here. It really is a collaborative process. What continuing medical education professionals bring to the table and continuing education professionals bring to the table is our expertise in educational design, our knowledge about accreditation, all of the design and strategic developments, and making sure that it's not promotional, that it really is fair and balanced and meets those kinds of needs. And then we work with our faculty, who are our content experts, who know all of the latest advances and know all of the really important things that are going on, so that we can do it as a collaborative process. I have a really interesting example where we've been working on adverse events associated with immunotherapy in cancer. So there are different side effects associated with immunotherapy because the way the drugs work are different than with chemotherapy. So chemotherapy basically goes in and tries to kill all the cancer cells, but it also negatively affects the immune system of the patient. Immunotherapy utilizes the immune system to negate or minimize or destroy the cancer cells. So they're very different processes. And so the side effects are different. Well, what we have found is that when patients have those kinds of side effects, where they end up going up to close to 40% of the time are to the emergency room, their primary care physician, their primary care provider, remote hospitals, because they may be traveling a long distance to get to cancer. And so they may not be talking to the oncologist, who is very knowledgeable about immunotherapy. They may be talking to healthcare teams who don't know hardly anything about immunotherapy, who have much less knowledge about it. So that's a good example of a gap. So what we're doing now is creating educational activities and resources and tools and other kinds of things for emergency medicine and primary care physicians and providers so that they can be informed in a way that can get them working and collaborating with the oncology team to make sure that we're doing the right things that are in the best interest of the patients. So that's the kind of work we do. And that's why it's so much fun.
It sounds fun, but it sounds very labor intensive too. You must have a pretty big staff to pull this all off.
I have a wonderful staff of 11 people. And we run about 250 activities a year. We work with 20 hospitals across the state, as well as national societies and organizations, as well as all of our faculty and staff here at the University of Virginia. So we stay very busy, but it's good work. You know, you can feel like you're making a difference and you're supporting the integrity of the healthcare teams that are providing good care, and you're supporting your faculty as well as supporting your patients. And you have an opportunity to really make an impact, which I think is just really marvelous.
So over, you know, 3-decade career, what are some of the big trends you've observed in CME?
So I think the big trends are is that industry used to support lots and lots and lots of continuing education. Because of all of the changes in the rules, the Physicians Payment Sunshine Act, there's FDA guidances and other kinds of things. Pharma has their own guidance as well. What we found is that industry is much more selective. It's also why you saw the direct-to-consumer movement move forward, was because there were so many restrictions on interactions between physicians and industry that were creating potentially a conflict of interest. I think that's probably the biggest thing. I think also as technology has improved, we're doing more and more technology just-in-time kinds of activities. It used to be that everyone went to national meetings and maybe would go for a whole week. Now people are really doing a lot of things remotely through Zoom, like we're doing today, really looking at ways that they can get access to information just in time in a very quick turnaround so that they can be thoughtful about what they're doing and informed on any given day. We do know that physicians have about 30 questions a day that they have to seek an answer for. And so our goal is to make sure that those resources are available and that it's coming from us as a trusted resource. So those are the kinds of things that I think are changing a lot. COVID also changed things pretty substantially. Our grand rounds are, most people don't know this, but every healthcare system and almost every hospital has some ongoing educational activity in their hospital. We have 50 of them that go on here at UVA weekly in every specialty. And so, but they're usually about an hour long, and they were always in person. So they would always meet in an auditorium, but now they can meet by Zoom or by WebEx or any other, you know, Teams or whatever the tool is, technology tool is. But the really nice part is it's actually increased participation because they don't have to try to get to a meeting space. Because if they get caught up meeting, doing something else, they can actually get on and participate in a way that they weren't able to do so before. They can also do it on their phones. They can do it in their cars. So, you know, the technology has changed, but it also changes how we design things, what the length of them are. Used to be everything was at least a minimum of an hour. We're now providing content in 5 and 10 minute segments. We're giving credit in 15 minute segments. You know, it's changed the whole form and fabric in a way that is, I think, very positive, because we're really meeting people where they are, our clinicians where they are, and our teams where they are, as opposed to expecting them to come to us. So I think all of those things are really important. You know, the accreditation rules continue to change, which is also a really fun thing. As the environment and the society around us change, and society had a big deal. I mean, it was really important to society that there not be a conflict of interest and that they weren't getting treatments based on who the best salesperson was from industry. So, or who the best company was in terms of promoting their products. And so all of the work that we have done in terms of making sure that the integrity of those educational programs is top quality is really important and valuable across the system. And society expects that and needs that from us. And we're really happy to provide it. But it really is a collaborative, work-intensive, interesting process, because the timeframes can be really short. You know, we can do something in 3 to 6 months if we need to, or even shorter if we absolutely have to. But it, you know, it keeps us busy.
Yeah. How soon before you're on TikTok, right?
Yeah, I don't know. We may end up on TikTok. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's happening on Twitter already. You know, one of our Tyson Bell is one of our infectious disease pulmonary specialists who has been all over the national news media around COVID. And he's got a huge number of Twitter followers, and people hang on every word he says in terms of what they do. So I think, you know, it's really interesting to see how all of those things shift and change. And so that's what's made it fun.
So, you know, obviously technology is a great enabler, as you've just been talking about. But I wonder, do you get the sense, do you have any metrics of understanding whether this is more or less effective a tool for actually learning? Do people learn as well with all of these additional electronic tools we've been talking about?
Yeah, I think they do. Adult learners are very different than undergraduate medical or college students or other kinds of things, because all of adult learners all have work to do. They all have, learning has to be woven into their daily routines and into their activities. And what we found is the demands of delivering healthcare continue to increase. And so not taking a whole hour is sometimes more than they can afford. But putting it in small, very focused packets. We pack what we call packetizing it and breaking it down into small modules and other kinds of things, make it much more easy to process. The other thing is that we know that sequential learning for adult learners is particularly important. And so if they listen to something and it's 15 minutes, but then they come back a week later and need to be reinforced, the technology, they can come back and do that. Whereas if you were at a live meeting, you know, by the end of a full day of a live meeting, you're sort of in brain overload and you can't always remember it. And we used to make these huge paper syllabi that had all of the materials in it and everything. And what we found was people couldn't fit the syllabus in their suitcases. And so they would leave them in the hotel rooms. So that wasn't really helpful.
Defeats the purpose.
Right. It defeats the purpose. So we moved to an electronic syllabus so that you can go back and look at something if you want to. We also make it available, you know, videos available and other kinds of things. So I think it does help. I think where it doesn't help is the conversation and the team building and the day-to-day learning that you need to have and the collaboration. Those communication-based things require that you be in a room together. And so you have to figure out how to balance those two things. You know, all of us are used to texting on the phone, but we all know that texting is very different than it's sort of one degree of separation away from having a real conversation with somebody. So there are places and times and situations that really warrant a real conversation and a real collaborative discussion. And those kinds of situations, applied learning situations, are situations that really require in person. And so we have to figure out ways to balance and make both of those available. We're always going to have both. I think both will always be part of the world that we live in, because they have to be there. We just need the collaboration in order to make it work.
Let's talk a little bit about the National Cancer Prevention Workshop. And full disclosure, you're a member of the board of Less Cancer, former chairperson. And so you have some attachment to the organization. Help me understand the message that comes out of Less Cancer and this workshop, which is about prevention. Is that kind of new in the CME world to talk that way? Because clearly, you know, medicine is about treating people, not necessarily preventing things.
Right, but the healthcare system is also changing, and it's now going to value-based care. So you're not fee for service anymore. So when you're fee for service, it doesn't matter as much, right? Because you're going to get paid regardless. Value-based care is a little different. You're not going to get the same kind of reimbursements and the same kinds of things. So now there's a real advantage to preventive care. So there's a much more incentive, as it were, financial as well as systems-based incentive to promote preventive kinds of strategies, having those discussions, encouraging people to think about it. And in the cancer field, that's particularly important. Cancer is devastating to families and devastating to the patient and very difficult to navigate that space. And so if we can prevent and have people do the kinds of preventive behaviors, eating better, exercising, doing the screening exams that they need to do. You know, Dr. Townsend talked to you about HPV and the benefits of a vaccine that can actually prevent cancer. Those kinds of things are incredibly important. Plus the fact we need to really hold industry, not commercial industry, pharmaceutical industry, but big industry accountable. You know, Rob Balot sits on our board as well. You know, industry needs to be accountable for helping minimize the carcinogens that are in the environment around us. And if they aren't willing to do that, then we need to be able to have incentives that, or disincentives that affect their business model in a way that changes, makes it them more likely to improve the quality of the work that they're doing as well, just like you would expect the quality of a healthcare professional and a healthcare team to give you optimum care. We should expect nothing less from the other industries that potentially are putting carcinogens in the environment. And many of us didn't know anything about it. You know, I mean, it's Christmas time, you know, right? You know, the holiday season is around and, you know, everybody used to smoke. I mean, in World War II, they sent cigarettes in the packets for soldiers. You know, clearly no one would do that now. We've learned much more about the science. The science changes all the time, which is why the field of continuing education is so critically important, is because it doesn't stay the same. And things that clinicians learned 20 and 30 years ago may not be the right approach any longer. And so we have to keep everybody current. You know, and industry needs to be held to, all industries need to be held accountable to making sure that prevention is front and center, a major part of whatever the business model is that they employ. You know, so, healthcare insurance is paid by businesses. Most of it's employer paid. So there's a real benefit to them to do it right the first time, but that hasn't, you know, that's still in transformation, I think. I think it's still, we're having better conversations about it. And thank goodness Bill Cousins holds all our feet to fire and keeps us moving and having those conversations, because it has to happen at multiple levels. And the thing I love about cancer prevention and the National Cancer Prevention Workshop, the best is that it's not limited to only one segment of the population, that we talk to policymakers and we talk to the general public and we talk to healthcare teams and we talk to communities and we talk to churches and volunteers. I mean, we're really trying to engage all of the communities that can help us have a voice in terms of promoting prevention. And while continuing medical education is a part of it, it's not the only part of it. So, I mean, that's why I like it so much.
do you get pretty good feedback from the CME community for the content, which Less Cancer, Bill Cousins, and the Cancer Workshop, Cancer Prevention Workshop provides?
Yes, yes. And we're sharing that information more and more all the time. And we actually reproduced some of them, you know, did some post-production on some of the things and put them on things like Coursera, which has 1 million users. You know, we also have it sitting on our website and our platform. And I share it with, we share it with all of our other hospitals, and we talk about it at national meetings, because it's a different kind of a model. Plus, Bill's always sending it out on social media. So I think, you know, the interesting part is that there's not a single pathway anymore for distribution. There, the more distribution pathways you can create, the better off you are. And maybe we should look at TikTok, because we haven't done that yet. But I think those things are, important. You know, I think they're incredibly important.
If I know Bill, he's probably already exploring that. So just a thought, a personal word or two. You've had a really long and stellar and excellent career, and I know you love what you do. Are you looking forward to the next chapter, or are you going to be sad to leave it?
I think there's always going to be some mixed emotions. I have such a great team here. I believe that that they will carry on well. It is going to feel very odd not to be here all the time, but I already know that there are some projects that I'm going to continue with, and at some level and in some capacity. I'm looking for a different balance, you know, for my personal life. I'm fortunate to have a 95-year-old mother who is healthy, that I would like to spend a little more time with. You know, so I think it's about sort of recalibrating a little bit. And so I am looking forward to doing some traveling, visiting some friends, but I fully expect to still be, you know, in this space and doing some interesting projects and helping out where I can, because I can't imagine not helping where I can.
Well, do us a favor. Don't retire from the Less Cancer Board anytime soon. We really need your input, and we really appreciate your expertise. It's really important to have people like you a part of this prevention message.
Well, thank you. I love it. I really love it. I mean, you know what? It's just so much fun, and it's a great group. So absolutely, I will be on the board for a while.
Okay, good. So we're not going to say goodbye, but congratulations on your retirement. And thank you for shedding so much light on CMEs. It's really actually, it's a fascinating subject. And it's not the kind of thing I think we think about when we go see our clinicians, but it's so important that they're up to speed. And boy, 30 questions a day, that's a lot of information that they need, and it's good you're helping provide it. So Jan Balmer, thank you so much to you and your staff, and keep up the good work. Even after you're gone, I'm sure it will continue.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to share with you today.